Hello and welcome to Talking Tourism, the podcast series especially for tourism operators and industry professionals. I'm Bella Alcorso and I'll be your host for today's episode. Talking Tourism is an initiative of Tourism Industry Council Tasmania. TICT is the peak industry body for the tourism industry in the beautiful state of Tasmania. If you're a regular listener to Talking Tourism, welcome back. If you're a first-time listener, enjoy today's episode. Remember, there are now more than 100 episodes of Talking Tourism Conversations available from wherever you access your podcasts. Or you can simply stream them on the TICT website at tict.com.au. We are recording this podcast today on the lands of the Palawa and Pakana, and TICT offers its respect to the Tasmanian Aboriginal people, their elders past and present, for their enduring care and management of these islands. Today's episode is brought to you by our partner, VXT. VXT is a purpose-built organisation to train a hospitality and tourism workforce to deliver the Tasmanian experience. VXT offers an array of industry-led, outcome-focused training courses both online and around Tasmania. So thank you very much to VXT for their generous support of TICT and for helping to make this episode of Talking Tourism possible. Now, without further ado, let's get into today's conversation with Christine Finnegan. Christine has had a truly remarkable career spanning more than 25 years as a leading sports administrator in Australia. This includes senior roles with the St Kilda Football Club, Melbourne Storm and the Melbourne Rebels. Christine is currently the co-chief executive officer with the Tasmania Jackjumpers, the 10th and newest team to join the National Basketball League. Christine was one of the first people hired in the formation of the Jackjumpers back in 2020 and has played a pivotal role in the club's success, both on and off the court. So welcome, Christine, to Talking Tourism.
Thank you very much, Bella. It's really good to be here.
Oh, the pleasure's all mine. So how's everything going at the moment? Obviously, co-chief executive officer, it's the off-season but still very busy. What's a day in the life looking like for you at the moment?
Yeah, it's so funny when I talk to people, they say, oh, the off-season, it must be really quiet. You must have your feet up. But for me, I guess, you know, coming from a commercial background as well, the off-season's actually your really busy time. So that's when you basically make sure that everything's ready to go again for the season proper. So in my new role as co-chief executive officer, not only looking after the commercial side of the business, but now heavily involved in the building of the team that we're putting on the court for next season, with free agency, meeting with our coaches and all the rest of it, making sure that we're ticking all our boxes and going to have a very, very competitive team next season.
Well, it was a very exciting time, and obviously in our first couple of years the Jackjumpers have enjoyed so much success, so obviously want to keep that momentum going.
Absolutely. You know, we have no doubt exceeded our own expectations and everybody else's expectations, and I think the conversation is often, can they maintain it? But I think when you've got your proper systems and processes in place, as our club has, and one of the very fortunate things that you get to do when you build a club from the ground up is you make sure that you have your foundations really strong, and we did that right from the outset, and I think that will prove over many years to be very successful for us.
Definitely. Well, take us back to the beginning, really. Like, what were you doing? Where were you when you were approached to be part of the Jackjumpers, and what made you accept the role in the first place?
Well, to be honest, I wasn't approached. I was in heavy lockdown in Melbourne. I think we're in lockdown phase two, probably 6 or 8 months in, and I was flicking through my LinkedIn and I saw this position come up to work at the Jackjumpers. Oh, obviously it wasn't called that then, but this NBL team coming to Tasmania, and having not being Tasmanian but having a lot of association with Tasmania, I thought, wow, what a great opportunity for the state of Tasmania. Such an incredible sporting state, very authentic, parochial audience that had been overlooked, I reckon, on the national and international sporting stage for some time. And as soon as I saw the ad, there was something in me that said, I just have to go for this job. I mean, what an amazing thing to go and build something from the ground up from a state that truly deserves it and people that I knew would desperately want it.
I mean, yeah, I personally became obsessed with it as soon as it kicked off. I mean, the Tasmania Jackjumpers, the name, I feel like a lot of people weren't too sure about the name originally, but I think you guys have done a brilliant job with the branding and the whole story of what the Jackjumpers is.
Well, I guess, you know, to be quite honest, I was as cynical as everybody else about the name. I know they ran a competition before we actually put myself and Simon and Jorik into place, and when Larry told me that the name would be the Jackjumpers, my initial reaction was like, oh, okay, that wouldn't have been my pick. And I'm not sure what would have been my pick, but I wouldn't have picked the Jackjumpers. But then being given the license and the authority to bring a Jack Jumper brand to life has been amazing. And like this little ad that's got such a fierce sting, and you know, it's tiny, but at one stage it could kill. And I think when you relate that into the state and basketball, you say, well, this little state that just completely bats above its average, and there's just so much synergy between the name and the state, and I think people have been really drawn to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a great match, really. So you've already kind of touched on it, but how did you find building the Jack Jumpers brand, obviously from the ground up? You've been involved with other sporting organisations like St Kilda and the Melbourne Storm, which were obviously pre-established before you were on board. So what were some of the differences there being a part of the Jack Jumpers, I guess, from day one?
Well, look, I think the Storm and the Rebels probably had more in common with the Jack Jumpers in the fact that they were both fairly, you know, in their embryonic years. I mean, the Storm was obviously a lot more established by the time I got there. They'd been around 7 or 8 years. They'd won a premiership very early, but they were also trying to find a foothold in a very strong AFL market. So, you know, it was very similar to attracting players into Tasmania, you know, attracting players into Melbourne, which wasn't known for rugby league and all. There were many, many similarities. Same with the Rebels. I went there in year three of its existence, so building something. But their foundations had been set. And I guess the difference coming here was I was given the license to help build the foundation, so the set of values that we wanted to live by, how we were going to build our personality. And it was very simple. It was actually, let's build a club that reflects the state that it represents. So let's build a club that's authentic, that's real, and that really cares about people.
And is that kind of what you think makes Tasmania different and special from other states? Like, is there one thing, obviously you've lived in Canberra, you've lived in Melbourne, it was coming to Tassie just, obviously, a breath of fresh air, like a lot of people say, it's quite different and unique. Is that kind of the specialty factor that we have down here, do you think?
There is no doubt there is a parochialism here that doesn't exist anywhere else. And I can honestly and genuinely say that, having met many Tasmanians and having been married to one for 20 years, I mean, there's something about this state that people feel incredibly proud of and incredibly connected to, regardless of where they live. You can feel it. And, you know, I always say they can pick a fraud a mile away. So you can't come in here and pretend you're one of them. You've got to earn your stripes. You know, you've got to actually come in and appreciate that these people truly love the place that they were born or they live, and that you've got to embrace all the things that they find special about it. And I think that's what the Jack Jumpers have been able to do, is really represent and look like the people that they represent.
Mm, absolutely. I mean, there's no denying the effect that the Jack Jumpers have had on everyone, really, in the entire state. I mean, every home game is sold out, whether it's in Launceston or at My State Bank Arena. So obviously it's what you want as a Chief Executive Officer. But what are some of the ways that you guys have been obviously trying to get people to still be involved with the brand, the sport, even if they might not be able to physically attend a game? I mean, you often see the casino lit up in green or the bridge in green. I mean, there's all those kind of activations. But what are some of the other things that you guys have been doing?
Yeah, look, it's really important to recognise that we're the Tasmania Jack Jumpers, not the Hobart Jack Jumpers. So regardless of whether you can get into the arena, there's this whole force of support across the state, and those people can't necessarily get to Hobart every week or Launceston every week to watch the games. So the way we built our program was that everything that we did, we took across the state. We replicated it all across the state. So, you know, the first 6 months of our brand, we didn't have a player. So Jack the Jumper and Scott Roth got in the car and drove everywhere around the state to meet people. We run clinics across the state thanks to Banjos. They've been able to help us take it into regional areas of Tasmania. We've been to Flinders Island. Like, we try to get everywhere with the brand to make sure that people feel engaged. In terms of the arena, having a full arena is a wonderful thing, but it does come with a different set of headaches. And, you know, we're a small arena. So, yes, it is great to say we're sold out every week, but, you know, I would almost be disappointed if we weren't selling out a 4,500-seat stadium every week. And I think the next big thing for us is to actually be able to expand the arena to 7,500 or 8,000 and be able to get more people in to come and take in the game and absorb the atmosphere. But in the meantime, what we will do is we'll take our brand to the people, because if the people can't come to us, then we'll go out to them. Mm-hmm. And we've brought in initiatives such as green screens, where you can go to a theatre, you can replicate the atmosphere you get at a game in a theatre, and just so you can be with like-minded people and cheer your team on in a collective environment.
Yeah, well, I think that's all what sport's about, really. I mean, it's quite powerful, I think, the impact that it has on everyone, and when everyone comes together and celebrates for one Yeah, one team or against two teams, it's quite incredible to see a rivalry form as well. Now, I did kind of want to touch on as well, before jumping onto the co-CEO role, you've had a lot to do with sponsorships and partnerships and kind of building that up from the ground. So when you were obviously approaching potential sponsors and partners, how were you selling the Jack Jumpers brand? Like what was the messaging? What was the kind of proposition to these businesses?
Yeah, well, look, I had to take them on a bit of an education path to begin with. NBL hadn't had huge touch points in Tasmania before we arrived. I think people were aware of the competition, but not many people had actually picked their own team, et cetera. So, you know, it was actually a very complicated process. I had to educate our potential partners about the game itself, about the competition, and then about the role the Jack Jumpers would play in that competition. What I was really clear about is that I wasn't selling a basketball game. I wasn't trying to get them to engage or partner with someone that puts on 14 basketball games a year. What they were going to engage with was a sports and entertainment product that people would absolutely gravitate to, whether you like basketball or not. There's something in our games for everybody, whether it's the dances or whether it's all the music that we play or actually the game itself. There's something in it for everyone. So it was actually about taking people on a journey, letting them know that this product was going to be different to anything else they'd ever seen. But beyond that, it wasn't just about home and away games. It wasn't just about a logo on a jersey. It was about an experience that their brand was going to be able to partner with and then be able to give their people an opportunity to have experiences through the Jack Jumpers as well. Sport is a wonderful platform to tell stories. And so when talking to these potential partners, my job is to let them know how we can tell their story on their behalf or how we can amplify their message or we can, you know, at its granular level, how we can help them sell their product. I'm very, very big on people. I'm very, very big on trust. So for me, it was always about under-promising and over-delivering. So sure, I brought them into the tent in terms of how great this club could be or how great this game it was going to be and is continuing to be. But for me, really, it was about giving them a set of values and giving them something that they really wanted to align with because they believed in it.
Mm. Oh, it's absolutely amazing. Very impressive, especially from someone on the outside looking in. So you've obviously been very successful in that sponsorship and partnership field. You've taken on some incredible partners and there's obviously a lot of overlap between sport and tourism. I mean, some of the major sponsors and partners that you have, I mean, Spirit of Tasmania, Hobart Airport, Federal Group, just to name a few. Why was it important to obviously get these kind of tourism bodies on board? I mean, there's obviously... the Spirit of Tasmania is bringing people obviously from the mainland over, but was it more than just that at the surface level?
Look, I think our biggest partner is actually the Tasmanian government. And you know, when the Tasmanian government looks at investing in a sports team or, you know, the AFL is very topical at the moment, what you've got to realise is that when they do that, sport gives a vehicle to Tasmania to put them on the national and international stage and the brand of Tasmania. So brands such as Spirit of Tasmania, Hobart Airport, all at Federal Group, all of those local brands that we've been able to partner with, we are also giving them the opportunity to amplify their message out nationally and internationally. I mean, this game actually has got a bigger supporter base internationally than it does nationally. So There are people around the world watching NBL games every week. So when we proudly wear that Tasmania brand, and we've got the Spirit of Tasmania, we take that really seriously. We know that that's our duty to the people of Tasmania to do. The government have certainly been very clear that if they're going to partner with us, then we've got to be able to be a vehicle for their message. And so all of those brands that are with us at the moment, we do that for them and we're very proud of that.
What's the future looking like? Obviously, we've got another season coming up in September, October of this year. I mean, what's the vision like? What are some of the exciting projects that you have on the horizon?
Look, we're really excited about the upcoming season. You would have seen announced last week that we've got a game on Christmas Day. That's a very new thing here in Australia to have games on Christmas Day. In the basketball, the NBA calendar, it's a very normal thing to play on Christmas Day, but for us it's a very new thing. And to be asked to play a game on Christmas Day was a real feather in our cap because it means that the broadcaster obviously sees value in our brand in Tasmania hosting this game, because the TV audience on Christmas Day is the biggest TV audience outside of the grand final in NBL. So once again, the opportunity to take our brand out nationally through a very big TV audience was too good to refuse. And so that's a big game for us. The other one I would like to touch on is the Teal Game. As you know, for the last 2 years, we've done the Teal Game in honour of Jo Harris, who's been fighting ovarian cancer, and very sadly she lost her battle last weekend. So on the 17th of February next year, our Teal Game will take on a whole new meaning because it'll be in remembrance of Jo and her fight. And as a club, we've taken on that we will continue to deliver Jo's message around gynaecological cancers and really help her get this wellness centre, you know, this place of respite for Tasmanians when they're going through the battle that Jo went through, that they've got a place of respite to be while they're receiving treatment.
Oh, it's incredible. She was an incredible woman, and obviously the foundation, the She Foundation, is incredible. And I was there for the Teal Game this year, and it was just the most electric atmosphere. I mean, every game that the Jack Jumpers put on, the entertainment factor, like you mentioned before, is next level, but I think it honestly goes to a whole new level when it comes to supporting charities like the She Foundation. So it's great to see that that will obviously be continued into the future.
And don't underestimate what it means, not only to our people that come to the games, but to the players themselves. I remember at the MVP, Josh Majette got up to speak and he spoke about how that was the most special game of the year for him. I mean, they went on to play, obviously, finals, but for him, the meaning behind that game and I guess the closeness of that family to our club meant something incredibly special. But beyond that, sport has a duty to play a role in amplifying messages such as ovarian cancer. We are a platform that people listen to, and we must take that seriously, and we must do our bit. And for us to even have maybe raised awareness, you know, to 1,000 more people that may not have known them, then that's a great thing. And I know Jo would be really proud of everything that we have done and continue to do, and we will do that in her honour moving forward.
Absolutely. Well, it's very, very special. It sounds like lots of exciting things are on the horizon. I can't wait to, yeah, get my tickets to the game and go and have a look.
Absolutely.
Now, we do something what we call at the end of each episode called the Big Seven. So seven fun kind of tourism questions. You might be judged more on your answers to these questions than the ones I've just asked you before. So, okay. Yes, no pressure at all.
Thanks, Bella.
But without further ado, we'll go to the first question. So what would you say your favourite spot is in Tasmania and why?
I'd say it's Cradle Mountain. I went there many, many years ago and I just could not. I was blown away by its beauty and did the walk and just the whole lodge and just the whole, the beauty of Tasmania is just so, I don't know, it's wrapped up in Cradle Mountain. So, yeah, that's probably my favourite spot.
It's a very good choice. I would have definitely my top three, I reckon. So it's a big tick. What would you say your favourite travel destination is in the world?
I've got to say New York. I mean, anyone who knows me knows I'm a bit of a shopper. Love a good shop, and I've probably been there about 10 times, but every time I go there I find something new and exciting to do. And the fact that I keep going back must mean that there's something about it that draws me to it. So let's go
Absolutely.
New York.
Absolutely. Beautiful. Someone's coming to Tasmania for the first time and they ask you what is the one thing they must experience while they're here. What do you suggest to them?
Can't believe you're asking that question. A Jack Jumpers
game. I know. I figured that was going to be the answer. Brilliant. Well, you've mentioned this before, but you're walking the Overland Track, hypothetically, for 5 days with three other people. You can pick anyone in the world, famous, not famous, dead or alive. Who would you pick? Who would be your three people?
Oh, well, who I would love to walk that track with is my son, my 20-year-old son, Ben, who I just adore. But Ben walks about 10 steps with me and he's over it. So I know that that's totally unrealistic. So I'm going to say my two sisters and my best friend, Trine. I think that, you know, you can meet lots of famous people along the way, but it's those people that are in your corner your whole life that matter. And those three people have always been in my corner, so I'm going to walk with them.
Beautiful. Sounds like a very fun trip. You're road tripping around Tasmania in the car. What are you most likely listening to?
Alanis Morissette. I love her. I think she's great. You know, she's. I heard she's doing another tour, so I'm going to do everything I can to get her to my State Bank Arena. But, yeah, look, I mean, in her day she was everything, and I've never really been able to move on, to be honest.
Amazing. Well, watch out my State Bank Arena for that. That'd be great. And when you arrive at your travel destination, what is your drink of choice?
Oh, that's an easy one, Pinot Noir.
Beautiful, yeah.
A Tassie Pinot Noir too. I've discovered that they do the best.
We do. Absolutely. And the last one, this is a bit of a funny one, curry Tasmanian scallops. One, have you tried them? Two, do you think that they're a culinary delight or a culinary crime?
My former mother-in-law used to make curried scallops, and I actually used to look forward to coming to Tassie just to have her curried scallops. So I'm saying culinary delight, as long as they're cooked by the right person and yum.
Beautiful. Well, that just about wraps up our discussion for today. So thank you very, very much. So thank you for everyone listening to today's episode of Talking Tourism. Remember to subscribe to hear more episodes as we release them every 2 weeks or so. Also, remember to spread the word, tell your friends, family, colleagues, anyone about our podcast. Talking Tourism is an initiative of Tourism Industry Council Tasmania, and today's episode was brought to you by VXT. I'd also like to send a big thank you to Caleb Miller at Mac40, who helped produce today's episode. So thank you very much. I'm your host, Bella Alcorso, and we'll catch up next time.